Welcome to Lord Abbott's Market Update. I'm Tony Fisher.
The work from home businesses are all riding the tailwinds of the technology revolution, specifically the phenomenon of conquering distance, space, and time.
Are you listening to this podcast in the comfort of your home office? If so, you may be part of a growing cohort of people now working from home during the pandemic. What are the investment implications of this momentous shift? We'll examine the topic in this first installment of this two-part podcast, which features a wide-ranging conversation with Lord Abbott partner Thomas O'Halloran, who heads the firm's Innovation Growth Equity team. We'll kick things off with a question from Lord Abbott's digital editor, Will Andrews.
So, Tom, you said that one of the most important issues in the equity market today is whether work from home or WFH stocks will continue to outperform cyclical stocks, or whether we're in store for a big reversal of this trend. So which do you prefer, WFH stocks, cyclical stocks?
Well, as innovation growth investors, we prefer the work from home stocks. We think that they're poised to outperform dramatically over the intermediate term and the long term. Their outperformance has been significant since the onset of COVID-19. So one has to be open to the possibility that there could be a reversal of this trend. And there are reasons to be bulls and bears on WFH stocks. But we're holding what we have and think that the outlook is quite good for them.
What do you mean by the WFH stocks? Maybe give us a definition of those stocks that are most benefiting from that trend.
By work from home, we mean a very broad-based term. These are companies that are enabling and benefiting by the movement of commerce, communication, and collaboration to more dispersed locations. Associated with this is the dramatic reduction in the need for physical movement of people to central locations to engage in these activities. The work-from-home companies tend to be clustered in areas such as e-commerce, cloud computing, and social networks, and many of these span different industries. For an example, specialized telephony software not only enables better work communication, it also is now replacing trips to healthcare providers through telemedicine. The key is that the work-from-home businesses are all riding the tailwinds of the technology revolution, specifically the phenomenon of conquering distance, space, and time. And all of this is very deflationary because the use of physical energy and goods is being reduced. All of this is also very destructive, leaving many old businesses in grave danger of extinction.
What exactly did the pandemic do for these stocks or to increase the adoption of their services?
Well, it's not an understatement to say that COVID-19 changed the world for WFH stocks because it accelerated the technology revolution and set the stage for dramatic market share gains for these companies and their stocks. Since COVID-19 began wreaking havoc on the equity markets in late February, WFH stocks have dramatically outperformed cyclical stocks. The pandemic forced us to conquer distance, space, and time. For the first time ever, we were able to do it. And that's the key. Back in the year 2001, when we had a previous crisis, the terrorist attack, we were not able to do video conferencing like we can today. So interpersonal communication was all by text and by voice, and it wasn't as good as the real thing. With things like video conferencing and e-commerce and social networks, we have been enabled to stay afloat during this crisis. We've had a forced recession accepted as the price for taming the pandemic. And that has really slammed economically sensitive businesses, in some instances, permanently maiming them. So it was really that COVID-19 forced us to separate And for the very first time, the technology revolution had allowed communication, commerce to occur as if we were in the same physical space. And that was a real game changer, and that will endure.
So, Tom, it's interesting you bring that up, because there are those who say that there could be some sort of rotation back into cyclical stocks at some point, you know, given that, you know, the WFH stocks have seen tremendous gains, and that some people are probably guessing that there will be a return to something resembling normal as we knew it before the pandemic. What's your response to that?
Well, there are credible arguments on both sides, the bulls and the bears on WFH stocks. Both have well-reasoned arguments. I believe, as a bull on WFH stocks, that the pandemic has permanently changed the economic landscape, driven mainly by the technology revolution. And I think that these work-from-home businesses will continue to grow for years and keep scaling to higher levels of profitability. So I expect they're going to remain dominant for the decade. Other investors believe that the cyclicals have been priced for despair and that things will return toward normal activity over the next few years. And if so, they believe cyclicals could crush work-from-home stocks as the latter flatten out or correct after big moves. Oftentimes when stocks have big moves, they consolidate the gains for a period of time, either going sideways or going down for some period of time. And if that happens to WFH stocks while cyclicals are rebounding off of depressed levels, cyclicals could outperform WFH. The future is likely going to unfold somewhere between these opposing views, but to help us envision what lies ahead, we really need to consider the origins of WFH businesses, the key developments that have enabled their dramatic outperformance recently, why this pandemic specifically accelerated those trends, and why these can persist and expand.
So it's interesting. So you are here with me on this call on a service called Zoom, along with our audio wizard, Tony Fisher. So how did this all become possible? How did the work from home sort of technologies and the whole, you know, impetus behind this trend, how did this come about?
It's been unfolding over the past 60 years, primarily. We have had two major revolutions that changed the nature of life. The first was the fossil fuel revolution in the 18th century. And this may be considered the revolution of the muscle. We found a way to ignite dense material to create human energy equivalents. This enabled longer lifespans, nice things like toilets and showers and air conditioners, and cars. And now, however, the revolution of the brain is taking over, the technology revolution. I say the revolution of the brain because the tech revolution has been marked by exponential processing gains. Processing is a brain function. And these processing gains, which have been relentless over the past 60 years, have been translated in a free market economy by entrepreneurs into multiple new commercial opportunities across a wide swath of industries. And many of these have now converged to overcome the former constraints of distance, space, and time. And that is the main initial huge investment opportunity of the technology revolution. And that is the key to understanding why the tech revolution made WFH possible. The second aspect of the technology revolution, which is replicating our brain, think Google, has begun and will unfold well beyond this decade. But for now, the key is How is the brain being used to overcome the costly human constraints of distance, space, and time? And it's not just a hard cost, it's also an opportunity cost that could be better taken advantage of if we can overcome these things. Now, incredibly, most of this has happened over the past 60 years. And it's also critical to appreciate that with each passing year, the force of the technology revolution has grown because there have been exponential processing gains. When I started at Lord Abbott in 2001, $1,000 of computing power bought you the equivalent of an insect brain. In 2023, $1,000 of computing power is going to buy you the equivalent of a human brain. That's quite extraordinary. And it started really gathering steam in 1960 when Intel created the microprocessor, which had the effect of enabling multiple electronic devices to be combined into one device. A couple of decades later, the Microsoft operating system had brought computing power to a window on a desktop that we could sit down and work on and do many other things. And this ushered in a new force, software. Now, software is even more brain-like than electronic circuits because it's based on instructions that are repeatable. Brain-like instructions. And this elevated the technology revolution, software did, from the physical to the virtual realm. And that all led to a personal computer boom over the next decade. And then we had these things called routers that tied all of the computers together in the early 1990s. When I started in the business and showed up for my first day of work, in 1988, my computer plugged into the wall and connected with nothing else. And then all of a sudden, these routers started showing up in the water room, and we tied all of the computers together by the end of the 1990s. And that made Cisco a gigantic stock. And then wireless networks enabled by companies like Qualcomm at the same time began to tie all devices together wirelessly. But what could get through these wireless networks was not a lot of information. That was ahead. And then the big one happened in 1995 when the United States government opened up the internet to commercial opportunities. And this unleashed a gold rush of new opportunities. The three key enablers that came out of the initial internet gold rush of the WFH phenomenon were e-commerce, cloud computing, and social networks. And these have continued to expand dramatically over the past 15 years, and we think they'll continue to expand dramatically.
But let's go a little bit further. Let's maybe delve into each one, the opportunities and some of the considerations within those three areas that you talked about, e-commerce, social networks, and cloud computing.
Well, I'd start by saying that they all began in the 1995 to 2005 decade. E-commerce got off to the first start, and cloud computing and social network followed soon thereafter. And they now represent enormous markets. And each of them have been what has enabled work from home. And each of them has many work from home constituents. And all three benefited from this new resource, which is processing, that was now growing in abundance. Think of it as densely packed matter was the raw material, the new resource of the fossil fuel revolution, but it was scarce. This resource, processing, is in abundance. So that is why the tech revolution is much more powerful than the fossil fuel revolution. But starting with e-commerce, e-commerce converts a physical interaction to a virtual one. Of course, it can't be all virtual, We have to get the goods from where they're made to the consumer, but multiple steps in the process are eliminated by e-commerce. And this brings about a dramatic reduction in resource requirements and immense convenience to the consumer, who saves distance, space, and time. For what used to be 100 trips to the mall, let's say, now there are maybe 10. That's a dramatic reduction in the use of physical resources. And by reducing resource requirements, e-commerce is a deflationary force. Social networks. One of our most basic needs as humans is to communicate. The telephone was one of the major developments that came out of the fossil fuel revolution. Initially, communication required face-to-face interaction, physical interaction. The telephone made remote communication between two people possible. Now, shortly after the turn of the current century, a new mechanism arose by which multiple numbers of people could communicate simultaneously, billions of people at once. Social networks. That's it. That was a huge breakthrough. And guess what? They're free because they can be supported by advertisements. So usage has naturally exploded. Now, they're great for communication, but they have a lot of bad things about them, social networks do. They are a platform for hate speech. That's not a good thing. They engender unproductive economic activity. I don't have a social network account. I don't go on one because I don't think it's very productive for me to do so. But billions do. And so these are very large and powerful entities, and maybe there'll be different ones in the future, but the phenomenon of a social network where multiple people can communicate effectively in one place is here to stay. And that enables a lot of great work from home businesses. Now, cloud computing. This really is maybe more powerful than e-commerce or social networks because it's directly leveraging software. And what it has done is it has really enabled us to work, to move from the physical realm to the virtual realm. So work moves from the physical realm to the virtual realm. So does communication. So does commerce. Initially, our software had to be distributed to match physical needs. So that when I started in 1988, the software that ran my firm was in the basement. And it was in the basement of every building in New York City. Tens of thousands of buildings. Then, around the year 2000 to 2005, in that 1995 to 2005 sweet spot, the tech pioneers realized they could host the software in one place, and it became called the cloud. This was a game changer, enabling software to become much, much more powerful because you could now continuously upgrade it. You could now make it specialized. You could now charge on an annuity-like revenue basis, meaning your business was more stable and therefore more valuable. And it really is what has formed the basis, more than anything, of our ability to share text, voice, and video communications, which completes the requirements for interpersonal equivalency. So cloud computing eliminated distance, space, and time more than anything. Now, realize that text communication requires a much smaller amount of information to be processed than a video one does. Dramatically less. And that is why it took time for the wireless networks to get to the point where they could handle that substantially higher data requirement to enable us to distance like we have during this crisis. We could have never done this in 2001 after the terrorist attack. We could have never done this to this extent as recently as 2008-09 when we had the global financial crisis.
So the pandemic, let's reference that for a second. And especially the comparisons with the 9/11 terrorist attacks and the economic impact. How is the pandemic different than those terrible events of 2001? Just give us some of your thoughts on that.
When you hear the debates about whether work from home stocks will continue to outperform cyclicals, the references are often made to September 11, 2001, and the great financial crisis of 2008-09. And this leads many to believe that we will bounce back from it like we did then. I think this one is very different, mainly because it is likely to be of much longer duration. The September 11, 2001 terrorist attack, which I saw from my office window across the river, was much more physically dramatic. It was scary, it was right in your face, and that did lead to many changes. There was a lot of harm to Lower Manhattan. But it didn't take long for people to realize that this was likely a one-time event. We were unlikely to have planes going into buildings in New York City or any of our large cities again anytime soon. So life returned to normal and mobility continued its march forward. And when I say mobility continued its march forward, let me just digress and point out that one of our basic needs as human beings is to be mobile because we're social animals. And so the technology revolution enabled commercial opportunities to make us more mobile. And we continued back on that path shortly after 2001. The great financial crisis was very different. That was primarily a financial crisis per se. And it did wipe out huge wealth, but it was resolved more or less in 6 months by printing money to bail out the financial system. The after effects have lasted to this day, but we did truly bounce back from these two events that occurred over the past decade. I think COVID-19 likely has a much longer life than either of these two. It's shrouded in mystery. We don't even know how it started. We don't even know how long it will live. We don't know whether it will give rise to other similar viruses. We do know that it is a virus that has a much greater sting than anything we've seen before. But it's likely to be around for at least a year or two or more. I would think, for the next year, it's unlikely we'll have a vaccine that everybody can take and feel safe. And even after we get a vaccine and people feel safe, there's the likelihood that something like this could happen again, and a very plausible likelihood. We can't really solve this problem, this health problem, by printing money like we did in the great financial crisis. Although we have certainly done that to tide us over this chasm brought about by a forced economic recession to try to tame the pandemic. And in the process, businesses have been destroyed. Restaurants, travel businesses, things like that, retailers, they're done. They're down for the count. They're not getting up. And in that sense, it's more like a depression rather than a recession. Income inequality has been exacerbated in a bad way by this, because lower incomes are underestimated in the work from home economy. So I think this pandemic is very different than September 11 and the GFC, and will likely last longer in its economic impact.
In the second and final part of this podcast, we'll pick up the conversation by delving into the question of growing inequality and other potential downsides of the work-from-home boom, along with an inside look at how Tom O'Halloran and his team balance social and other factors while making investment decisions. We'll also get Tom O'Halloran's view on the longer-term prospects of the work-from-home stocks as technology, business, and society evolve. Stay tuned and stay up to date at lordabbott.com. Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite streaming app of choice. Thanks for listening.
GFC refers to the Great Financial Crisis of 2008 and 2009. Unless otherwise noted, all discussions are based on U.S. markets and U.S. monetary and fiscal policies. The value of investments in equity securities will fluctuate in response to general economic conditions and to changes in the prospects of particular companies and or sectors in the economy. While growth stocks are subject to the daily ups and downs of the stock market, their long-term potential as well as their volatility can be substantial. Value investing involves the risk that the market may not recognize that securities are undervalued and they may not appreciate as anticipated. Smaller companies tend to be more volatile and less liquid than larger companies. Small cap companies may also have more limited product lines, markets, or financial resources, and typically experience a higher risk of failure than large cap companies. The value of an investment in fixed income securities will change as interest rates fluctuate and in response to market movements. As interest rates fall, the prices of debt securities tend to rise. As rates rise, prices tend to fall. Asset allocation or diversification does not guarantee a profit or protect against loss in declining markets. No investing strategy can overcome all market volatility or guarantee future results. Market forecasts and projections are based on current market conditions and are subject to change without notice. Projections should not be considered a guarantee. This broadcast may contain assumptions that are forward-looking statements, which are based on certain assumptions of future events. Actual events are difficult to predict and may differ from those assumed. There can be no assurance that forward-looking statements will materialize or that actual returns or results will not be materially different from those described here. This broadcast serves as reference material and is provided for general educational purposes only, does not constitute an offer to acquire, solicitation for an offer to acquire, an offer to sell, or solicitation for an offer to buy any securities, nor is intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice on any securities, and cannot be used for any of the foregoing. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbott speaker are those of the speaker as of the date of the broadcast and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. While such views are subject to change at any time based on market and or other conditions, and Lord Abbott disclaims any responsibility to update such views. Neither Lord Abbott nor the Lord Abbott speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. The value of investments and any income from them is not guaranteed and may fall as well as rise, and an investor may not get back the amount originally invested. Investment decisions should always be made based on an investor's specific financial needs, objectives, goals, time horizon, and risk tolerance. Please consult your investment professional for additional information concerning your specific situation. The information provided is not directed at any investor or category of investors and is provided solely as general information about Lord Abbott's products and services and to otherwise provide general investment education. None of the information provided should be regarded as a suggestion to engage in or refrain from any investment-related course of action, as neither Lord Abbott nor its affiliates are undertaking to provide impartial investment advice, act as an impartial advisor, or give advice in a fiduciary capacity. If you are an individual retirement investor, contact your financial advisor or other fiduciary about whether any given investment idea, strategy, product, or service may be appropriate for your circumstances. This broadcast is a copyright 2020 of Lord Abbott & Company, LLC. All rights reserved. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part or any form without permission of Lord Abbott. Lord Abbott Mutual Funds are distributed by Lord Abbott Distributor, LLC.